Tonight's shiur for the week of Parshas Toldos. We begin with a shaila, which was brought to Rav Zilberstein from a Yehudi, Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, was a well-to-do businessman. And he went into partnership with a group of people here, and they built a huge office building. And each of the partners had to invest. This was in Tel Aviv, so in the prime property, real estate. So each of the people had to invest literally millions of dollars. As this, you did also. However, he knew his partners were not religious in any which way or form. So he made sure to include in the contract that he's only going to go into partnership on the condition that there's no Chilul Shabbos in the project. Not in the building, not in the sale of the properties. Fine, they agreed, and the contract was signed. What happens? Fine, the building gets put up, or it was beginning to be put up, and as such, they started selling, putting out for sale the various offices and things. So, the group decided that they were going to have a days where they, display the viewings, people can see the different units and those who want to buy, etc. And they decided that the best day for this was on Shabbos, Rachman Litzlah. People are off that day, it's a good day to attract potential buyers. Okay, so they organized this, these days of viewing on Shabbos. So our Yid got word of this, of course, and he said, nothing doing. He said, well, we have an agreement. There's going to be no Chilul Shabbos in this project. So they countered, and they said, listen, we're not going against the contract in any form. It says in the contract that there's to be no Chilul Shabbos in the building or in the sale. Well, we're not selling, and we're not building. We're just showing the units, and therefore that's not part of the contract. We're not going against the contract. However, this Yehudi knew that having a day of viewing, on Shabbos would be bring tremendous Chilul Shabbos. People come, of course, in their cars, using the elevators when they get there, and of course, writing down the various changes or offers and all kinds of things. It's full of Chilul Shabbos, and he didn't want anything to do with it. On the other hand, if it was true what they're saying, and it was not literally in the contract, and he would have to leave the project, it would mean he'd have to lose millions of dollars, a huge loss. So he didn't know what to do. So he brought this shaila of great weight to Rav Zilberstein, who in turn turned to his father-in-law, Rav Elyashiv Zatzal, and asked him what the halacha is, lemaisa, what should he do? Rabbi Yashiv told him that since this Yid protested, he wasn't happy with what was going on. He said he does not want Chilul Shabbos, he does not want these days of viewings to go on. But they don't want to listen. So then he doesn't have to lose anything. He doesn't have to lose even up to a fifth of his possessions, as sometimes we have to lose to give for a mitzvah. No, he doesn't have to lose anything because it's not his fault. He protested, and they don't want to listen. That's their fault. But because of that, he's not forced to lose his money in such a situation. Rav Zilberstein said, but they're being mechal Shabbos with his property, with his he's a chelik in this. So Rav Yosher says, okay, I understand, but it's like, imagine a thief breaking into your house and you're screaming at him, get out, get out. But he doesn't listen. He starts turning on the lights on Shabbos and that does thing. What are you after? That's not your fault. You don't agree with what he's doing. You're not helping him. You're the opposite. You'd rather him, of course, not be there. So you don't have to take a loss because of that. However, Yashav concluded and said, everything I've told you now is what we call Mimidas Adin, the plain base halacha. However, there's, of course, a Midas Chasidus. And if he wants to, you know, leave the partnership, leave the chevra, and take the big loss, he can do so. And if he wants to be a chassid and go do extra, but he doesn't have to. He told him, and since he protested, he can still stay in the partnership. And even though they're doing these viewing days on Shabbos, so what was the end of this story? Well, Rav Zilberstein came back with him with Rabbi Yashav's tshuva. And what did the Yehudi decide to do? He decided he was going to make a Kiddush Hashem. Yes, he was going to inform his partners that he wants out. If there's going to be Chilul Shabbos, he doesn't want any part of it. He didn't have to go out, but he decided he was going to make a Kiddush Shem Shamayim, take the loss of millions, and do it for the sake of Hashem, for the sake of his Shabbos. What happened? Unbelievable thing. He, in fact, informed his partners of this. And what happened? Well, when they heard of this, they were astonished. They couldn't believe that a person could do such a thing. How could a person give up millions of dollars for the Shabbos? Well, it made such an impression upon them that they said, okay, it's okay, we're not going to kick you out. We're going to keep you in a partnership. We're going to rewrite the contract, and there's going to be no Chilul Shabbos at all. Even for days of viewing, nothing, no Chilul Shabbos. Because we are so impressed in the way you're in your conviction for the Shabbos. So as a result, that's what was done. And of course, it led to a tremendous, tremendous Kiddush Hashem. Next, rather interesting Shaila. There was a fellow, Yehudi, that had a tough time making ends meet. And his job was to wash floors in a bank. That's it. He couldn't find anything else. And that's how he made his few dollars, washing the floors in the bank. One clear day, what happens? He wins a lottery. He won the lottery of tens of millions of dollars. Well, needless to say, he wasn't interested now in continuing his job washing the floors in the bank. So, of course, he told the board, you know, of directors of the bank, it's been nice working with you, but I'm now a multimillionaire, and I'm not going to continue washing the floors in the bank, obviously. It's been nice dealing with you and working for you. Shalom. However, the board said, not so fast, mister. He said, what? He said, look, we have a contract. You signed a contract that you're going to work here, and there's another 2 years left in the contract. So you can't renege, you can't go back on the contract. Contract's a contract. 2 more years, you have to work washing the floors. So he says, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to wash floors anymore. I'm a multimillionaire. So he said, listen, they told him, a contract's a contract. You want out? You'll have to pay for it. So it's what we call blackmail. And they said, unless you give us this huge amount of money, we're not going to let you go out on the contract. Well, he said, well, this is ridiculous, right? He wasn't going to continue. Besides, it was beneath his dignity now as a millionaire to wash floors. And he said, can you imagine the media is going to get a hold of this story. It's going to be all over the place, this millionaire is washing floors. I can't do such a thing. So they said, okay, fine, you want out, break the contract, but pay for it. So, Shaila is who is right. The answer here, which was given, is that the janitor has every right to cancel the contract. How so? Because the halacha is that in fact a person must have a right to cancel a contract of work. Why is that? Because it says in the Torah, Kili b'nei Yisrael avadim. Because b'nei Yisrael, Hashem says, are my slaves. And Chazal learned the Gemara of Bava Metzia, Daf Yud, that avadai heim v'lo avadim l'avadim. I want my Jewish people to be slaves to me and not slaves to other slaves, not to other people. In other words, if a person cannot renege, can't go out on a work contract, he's therefore basically defined as an eved, as a slave. He can't leave. He's a slave. So therefore, it's built in. It has to be that every work contract, there must be a way for the worker to be able to say, Shalom, I'm not interested anymore. If not, he has a din of a slave. And in fact, that's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, that somebody who begins to work and has a right to quit, even if he has a contract. So, therefore, in our question as well, the janitor has every right to cancel his contract, and they'll just have to find somebody else to wash the floors. Could be that he himself will find somebody. And for sure, this is the case. All the more so with the bank, because it's clear that there's good reason for him to leave, being now a multimillionaire. And it's also clear that the bank not wanting to cancel the contract is not necessarily because he's such a wonderful janitor and he can't find anybody else, but they just want to blackmail him. So for all those reasons, the psak was given that he may cancel his contract with the bank. Next, there's a story of a building that was put up, a huge office building, and it was again opened up for sale, for selling the units for offices and things. After the entire building was put up, it's like a multi-floor building, very high. A fellow, call him Reuven, he comes up to the people of the building, the owners, and he says, "Very nice. I see you made a inauguration ceremony, as we call it, the Evan Pina cornerstone, big party, and I'm very happy for you, but I have some news for you." They said, "What's that?" So Reuven tells him, "I live, as you see, right next door to this building, and I don't know if you realize this, but you built your building on a little bit of my land, my property, and that's Gzela." He said, "We built on your property?" They said, "Yeah." He said, "How much of your property did we encroach upon?" So Reuven said, "A whole 30 centimeters." Psst, 30 centimeters, that's 1 foot. He said, "So what's the big deal?" He goes, "What do you mean, what's the big deal? Listen, a foot's a foot. And it's my land, and you built your building on my land." So they said, "Wait, let us check into this." So they investigated, they called out, the measuring people, etc. And sure enough, Reuven was right. They really did build a 1 foot onto Reuven's land. So they said, "Okay, Reuven, look, apologize. We had no intent of doing such a thing, and we didn't realize we were going 30 centimeters onto your land, and we'll pay you for that, little strip of land that we are building is sitting upon. No problem, So Reuven said, "Nothing doing." He said, "Nothing doing? What, you don't want to get paid?" So he says, "No." He says, "I want my land." "What do you mean? I don't want to get paid. I want my land." So he said, "What do you mean you want your land? Our building is on your land. What do you mean?" He said, "Fine. I want my land." So he said, "What do you want us to do?" He says, "I don't know. Take a knife and cut a foot of your building off and give me my land back." So he said, "That's totally ridiculous. You know that. You can't take a knife and cut a 30-story building. So, says Reuven, okay, fine. If you're not going to cut off a foot of your building, then I'd like something in return. They said, uh-oh, what's that exactly? Reuven says, I want a whole floor of your building, your office building. They said, what? A whole floor of our office building? He said, listen, Reuven says, you have your choice. Cut off a foot of your building that's on my property, or give me a floor. Fine. Shiloh was brought in. Who is right? Is Reuven right, or the people of the owners of the building right? To begin to answer this question, there is something which the Gemara calls Takanas Marish, or Takanas Ashavim. What is that? That as far as the Iker Torah law goes, if somebody steals something, he must return what he steals, the object that he steals. He can't just say, here, take some money. No, he stole something, he has to, as long as it's still around, he must return it. Even if this article was, let's say, for example, the Gemara says, a beam. So this beam was used and built into the ceiling, whatever, of a building. So, Mikaridin, as far as the Torah law goes, he has to take apart his building and return that beam that he had stolen, that he built into his building. That's the Torah law. However, along came the Chachamim, and they saw that, you know, if this is, we're going to stick by the rules to such an extreme, it's going to cause the people are not going to want to do tshuva. Going to say, what? Take apart my building? Forget it. And they're going to end up not doing tshuva, not returning the stolen things. So in order to encourage people to do tshuva, to return things that they had taken without permission, the Chachamim made a gzera. It's called Takanat Marish. Marish happens to mean a beam, based on our mashal, our example. As we said, it's also called Takanat Hashavim, those that want to do tshuva. And they made a special decree that somebody that steals an article and it's built into his house or something of the same, something like that, he doesn't have to take apart his house, his building, he can just pay for the beam that he had taken. And this allows people to weigh out to do tshuva. So, based on that, one would think, okay, so that's the answer. So the people of the building, you know, they went on this guy's, took his land, but to give back the land, they don't have to take apart their building, and we see you don't have to do such a thing. Sounds cut and dry. However, that it's not so pasha. Why? Because this takana that the Chachami made, that you can pay instead of giving back the object, they also said does not apply to land. It only applies to movables, metaltalin. So if somebody steals land, they have to give it back no matter what, basically. And that's the Shulchan Aruch says, the Ramah, in Simen Shin Samach of Choshen Mishpat, writes the Ramah, Gazal Karka, Ubana Aleha Binyanim Golim. One steals land and builds on it big buildings. Says the Ramah, Sarich Listor Hakol Ushiva Karka Levi. You have to knock all the buildings down and give back the land. Shalo asu takanat hashavim bekarka, because this takana of allowing one to pay back was not, they did not make such a takana, such a decree when it came to land. So that being the case, now it's not so pashut. It comes out that the owners of the building do have to knock down their building, or at least give Reuven a floor in their building, as he had asked for. However, once again, it's not so simple. Why? Because there's a tshuvas mahabit that's brought down the Pisrei Tshuva that says that if the person built the house or whatever on the land and it was only, he encroached only a little bit and it was unintentional, he says in such a case, he doesn't have to knock down the house, building, etc. he can just pay for the land that he is on. Because that's, was, again, it was done unintentional, and it was only a little bit. So, in such a case, we do say takanas shavim, and they only have to pay for the land. However, there's also a Mishnah Lamelech. The Mishnah Lamelech in Hilchas Geneva brings this mabit, and he writes, "Ve'ein nir li dvar av klal." He says, "I'm sorry, I totally disagree. The halacha is the halacha. You can't, there's no takana shavim by buildings. You're building somebody's land, you have to knock down the building. That is halacha. Finished. Nothing doing. Well, it's only a little bit. It was without kavana. No." So it comes out that we have a machloikas, a poskim, between the mabit and the Mishnah Lamelech. Mabit says you can just, you don't have to destroy your building, pay back the money for the land, whereas the Mishnah Lamelech says, as we mentioned, nothing doing, you have to knock down the building. So what do we do in our situation? Well, there's another concept in halacha called kimli, meaning this is what I hold. Thus, when Reuven comes now to these people and says, look, the Mishnah Lamelech says you have to knock down your building. So knock down your building or give me a floor in your building. Well, the people of the building can answer, kimli, we hold like the Mabit. You can't make us knock down the building because we hold like the Mabit. It's a machloikas, the Mabit versus the Mishnah Lamelech. You're coming as a tainu, the Mishnah Lamelech says, well, we hold like the Mabit, which is an authentic posik, and he says you don't have to. And they have a right to say kimli, that we hold like this posik. And mele, the final conclusion here in the halacha, is the people of the building do not have to knock down, take off a foot or knock down their building, because they can say we hold like the post-psechik, the mabit, which says one does not have to do so, but, of course, they do and should and must pay handsomely Reuven for the amount of land that their building is, in fact, sitting upon. The next shaila, also an interesting one, there was a Talmid Chacham from Eretz Yisrael who was visiting a certain kehila in Chutz La'aretz. He's walking there on the street and he's approached by a Jew, which clearly looked like a Jew, of course, which was not religious in any way. But he approached him, he looked like a Talmid Chacham, you know. So he approached him, he says, excuse me, I have a question, maybe you could answer. So he says, please, I'll try. What's your question? He says, well, he says, I have a yurt site for my mother, and it's on the 20th of January. Now, my question is like this, he says. You see, the yurt site on the 20th of January, but my mother died, it was in the evening, it was after sunset. So, my question is, on what day do I keep the yurt site? Do I keep it on the 21st of January, because it was after sunset on the 20th, or since it was before midnight, and it doesn't become the 21st of January until midnight, so maybe I should keep it, the yard site, on the 20th of January, since it was after sunset, but it was before midnight, and therefore maybe I should keep it on the 20th and not on the 21st. Well, this Talmid Chacham never heard a shy like this before. So he... His initial response was, well, don't you have the Hebrew date of when your mother passed away? So he says, of course I do. He says, well, why don't you just keep the Hebrew date? So he says, oh, I did. I go to shul on the Hebrew date, and I also go to shul again on the English date. So that's the Hebrew date I went already to shul. I just want to know about the English date. So he says, but what do you care about the English? He says, listen, he said, that's what we do in the shuls around here. We celebrate the Hebrew date and the English date both. So this Talmud Chacham couldn't believe his ears. And he said, listen, this trial is a little bit too much for me. I have to, you know, look into it. And I'm sorry, I can't answer it. That's fine. So he's very curious. And he went to one of the Orthodox rabbis, you know, in the community, and he told him the story, what he had heard. He says, "See, this guy tells me that they celebrate here the Hebrew and the English." He says, "That's right." He says, "That's right?" So the rabbi says, "Yeah." He says, "What? Why would you celebrate in English the day for the Yahrzeit and the Hebrew too?" But so he said, "I'll tell you why." He says, "You see, the people in this kehila, they're not frum, they're not religious at all, and you never see them in shul. The only thing is, you know, they have this soft spot in their heart, you know, for the Yahrzeit of their parents, and so that's about the only time, maybe Yom Kippur. Besides that, they don't come to shul." So the Orthodox rabbis of the community got together, and we decided that, you know, the more these people come to shul, the better. Because when they come for a yortzeit, we make a whole thing. We bring in speakers, and we talk about Yiddishkeit, about Shabbos, and tefillah, and all of the essentials of Yiddishkeit, and try to be, you know, have an influence on these people. So the more time they come to shul, the better. So that's why, since they only like to come on yortzeit, so we decided to institute that they have to celebrate two yortzeits, the English and the Hebrew. That's bringing them to the shul more, and in order to makarev them. That's very interesting. So, this Talmud Chacham went back to Eretz Yisrael, and he approached Rav Zilberstein, and he said, is there such a thing that is the reason to, you know? So Rav Zilberstein said, "Chas v'shalom." He said, "Nothing doing." He says, you cannot do what these people, in his opinion, are doing. Why? He says, that's called distorting the Torah. The Torah is the Torah. Yahrzeit goes after the Hebrew date and finished. By making, instituting a Yahrzeit on the Goyish date, who knows what that can lead to? Then they're going to distort it even more, and then they're going to, who knows, make the kids bar mitzvah according to the Goyish date, and they're going to, you know, celebrate Rosh Hashanah on the 1st of January, and et cetera, et cetera. It goes on, and it can cause all kinds of distortions, and until it leads to the whole to destruction of the whole Torah, chas v'shalom. He said it's a chilul Hashem to do such a thing and celebrate a Yahrzeit on an English date, which doesn't exist according to the Jewish law. And he says it's one thing, you know, you want to tell them that they should come to shul on the 1st of March to hear Parsha Zachor. Okay, you know, this could act, they can relate to, you know, the date. Okay, that's one thing. But to actually put in a thing that you have to come to and celebrate a Yahrzeit on an English date of the Yahrzeit, so that's totally unacceptable. And he concludes with the words of Rav Yashiv that he said time and time again by similar shilas such as this. And he says, when Kiruv is very nice, it's very chashav, very, very important. However, only if it's done in the confines and according to the rules of the Torah. You have to keep the Torah 100%, and then, while keeping the Torah, you're makarev, beautiful. But you can't give up on the Torah for Kiruv. He says, there's no such thing doing mischar b'mitzvahs. You can't do business with the Torah, with the mitzvahs. Yeah, we'll give a little in here, not do this, but we'll do that, and this will gain here. Well, no, nothing doing. You can't put aside a little bit of Torah here so you gain Torah there. A Torah is a Torah. You have to keep it as it is, the way the Torah says, the way Chachamim says, and that's how you have to makara people. If you can't do that, then it's not, that's not the way for Kiru. Conclude tonight's share with a beautiful little story. It was once this told by Rav Gavriel Toledano. It was of a bacher who lived in North Tel Aviv. His name was Amos. And he was a total non-religious person that slowly but surely started hearing things, and he started to come a little bit closer to Yiddishkeit. And people told him that there's this very, very great rabbi in Bnei Brak. His name is Rav Shach. And, maybe he wants to pay him a visit. So Amos thought, he has all kinds of, you know, questions about this, questions about that, in Yiddish guy. So he said, hey, maybe I'll ask this big rabbi my questions, maybe see if he can give me good answers. So he decided to go to pay a visit to Rav Shach. However, when did he go? He went on Purim. Now Purim's not the best day to go visit Rav Shach. He gets there, and there's a huge lineup of people wanting to go in and get a bracha, whatever, from Rav Shach. And, okay, but he says, you know, he came to Bnei Brak for this purpose, he'll wait in line. So he waits long time. Finally, it's his turn. And he gets into Rav Shach, and he says, yes, could I help you? What can I do for you? So Amos says, listen, Rabbi, I'm not religious yet, but I'm grappling with it, and I have some questions I'd like to, maybe the Rav can answer me. So Rav Shach said, listen, today is Purim, and there's a lot of people still behind you in line that are waiting to get in, and, it's not the time to answer these questions. You know, I have to sit and discuss whatever. And there's no time for this right now in Purim when there's a lot of people waiting. So what I suggest is, why don't you come back in a month, which is Pesach. Come during Chol HaMoed. Things are much calmer. And then you can address your questions, peacefully. Okay, what was Amos going to do? And he said, okay. And he left. So he went back home, and the month rolled around. Along came Pesach. He remembered what Rav Shach had said to him. But he felt, the more he thought of it, he says, why should I bother this? He's such a big Rav. He's got a door. And, I'm gonna go ask him my silly little questions that I have, and I don't know how I could have gone there to begin with, and he decided that he wasn't gonna go. Fine. The last day of Chol HaMoed rolls around. There's a knock on his door. Amos answers the door, and he's shocked. What does he see? Who does he see? Rav Shach. Rav Shach, the Gadol Dor, standing there in his doorway. So he says, Rebbe, what? So Rav Shach said, listen, I remember you came to me on Purim, and you wanted to speak to me, wanted to ask these questions, and I told you that now is not a good time, you should come back on Chol HaMoed. So, I was waiting, and first day, second day, Chol HaMoed, whatever, you didn't show up. So today is the last day of Chol HaMoed, and you still hadn't come. So I figured, okay, if you didn't come to me, I'll come to you. So I'm here. What can I do for you? What questions do you have? Maybe I can answer them. So Amos said, Harav, I don't have any questions anymore. So Rav says, what do you mean? He says, if the Torah can produce a personality like yourself, that even though all of Am Yisrael are on your shoulders, and yet you still found the time to not only remember who I am, but make a point of schlepping out. I know it's not easy for the Rav, he's an older man, and weak, but he schlepped all the way out here to my apartment to answer my questions. If the Torah can produce such a personality, he says, everything's clear to me. I see the Emes, and the Torah is Emes. I have no more questions. And sure enough, he was Mischazek more and more, Amos, until he became a full-fledged Baal Tshuva. We should all be Zoiche to be Choyzer B'Tshuva Shleima, and with that, Hashem should bring us very soon the Bias Gold Tzedek.